Welcome to the Cosmosis Podcast. This is Justin Moses, and this is episode 20. And I don't have a guest today, but no problemo. I've been planning for this episode for the last couple of weeks, and had a little delay in getting the production of it started because of some malfunctioning equipment, and I've just been downright down with some allergy problems, but feeling better today. And I think I have a piece of equipment that'll work. And by equipment, I mean a cassette player. For those of you that might not know what that is, well, Google it. And you should be able to find some results on that. I'll start out by saying I hope everybody had a great Mother's Day. I certainly did. I went in and visited my mother on Sunday, and I had a great time with the family. Both Sunday and Monday morning, I got to visit with my grandparents, my mama, my papa Moses, and it's precious time. As many of you know from a previous podcast, my grandmother has Alzheimer's, and I do encourage you, like, there's many great causes out there, and I'm all for a whole bunch of them, but if you have a little extra room in your budget, a little extra expendable income, I do think Alzheimer's research is a worthy cause, and I would encourage you to seek that out and contribute if you can. Before that trip in, I had a great time at Doyle Austin's Bluegrass Festival last Saturday in Denton, North Carolina. Got to see a lot of great friends, like the Boxcars, and got a copy of their new record, which you should check out if you're a fan of bluegrass music. And got to see Doyle's band, just a little bit of them, and several others. And before that, we had a great time at the Crimson Moon Cafe in Dahlonega, Georgia. Dahlonega is a charming little town. If you get a chance to visit it, I would recommend doing so. And before that, we played in Bristol at the Birthplace of Country Music Museum. And I will say, coming up this coming Saturday, May the 14th, we'll be playing on the Opry, the Grand Ole Opry here in Nashville. You can tune it in, WSM 650 online. It's streaming worldwide, I think, so check us out there. And then the next big thing coming up is Dell Fest. And we're playing there on May the 27th. That's a Friday. And we'll be around pretty much the whole weekend and sitting in with other people here and there. So if you get a chance to make it up there, it's in Cumberland, Maryland. So check it out. They've got a website, delfest.com, and they've got a Facebook page and all that kind of stuff. So you know where to find them. Do visit justinmoses.com for the latest dates and news and everything concerning this podcast and my music career and all sorts of such. Please do continue to support the podcast. And the biggest way you can do that is by going to iTunes and hitting the subscribe button. The more people who subscribe and leave reviews and rate the show, the better it looks for the iTunes folks to move the podcast up in the rankings. So if you enjoy it, please do your part to help make sure that it grows, and continue to share on social media about the show. And I really do appreciate those of you who are listening and sharing and all such. My plan for today is to do sort of an autobiography in audio style, using a lot of the audio that I've accumulated through the years, or some of it, and give examples of some of the stuff that I was listening to when I was first learning to play music. So my story, like most folks' story, I'm sure, starts with my parents. They were both musicians, and they actually met as a result of two important factors in my early childhood, and that's music and church. Mom's family had a group called the Benedictions but there was three separate entities of them. There was a trio, and then like a kids group, and then another group with like five more people. And one of the guys that played with them asked my dad to play with their group. And so that's how my mom and dad met. So my dad had started playing acoustic guitar probably around the age of 12, somewhere in that range. And, you know, messed around with it a little bit here and there. But he said he got way more interested in it a few years later when he and his brother Gary were able to trade acoustic guitar for an electric. And so all through my early childhood, I would hear my dad playing electric guitar. And he would be playing things like the Wildwood Flower, like a... It would sound something like that. I distinctly remember him playing the Johnny Cash intro that's very famous that everybody, once you start playing the guitar, you definitely learn this. I would hear stuff like that, and one of his favorite things to play that I was always hearing in the house was Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line. It's a Waylon Jennings song, and I think they did it in E. I'm not sure he might have done that in A, but let's do it there in E. Now that's the way my dad played it, and I heard that many, many times through my childhood. So that's something that really stuck in my head. As I said, met as a result of music and church, and the church factors in there from, they were a gospel group, singing group, and that's where they would have met the first time. So I live in the southern part of the United States where church is a religion, is a big factor in everyday life. It's it's called the Bible Belt. So a lot of the music I heard was also gospel music growing up. It was either always gospel music or hee-haw. We listened to or watched hee-haw a lot in my very early years, which was a lot of just country music, the country music of the day. And so I wasn't exposed a great deal to pop music or rock at the time. It's mostly country and gospel. So in my early childhood, one of the big things that sticks out besides hee-haw on a Saturday night was on Sunday morning there was a show called the Mull Singing Convention that came on WBIR Channel 10 in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it was Reverend Mull and Lady Mull, his wife. They hosted this show, and lots of Southern gospel acts were on that show. Every week they would play performance videos. And what hooked me eventually on that show was some of the bluegrass gospel, the more bluegrass gospel acts. The Primitive Quartet being the most important. Also a group called the Principles, and a group, the Isaacs. And before they were the Isaacs, it was Joe Isaacs and the Sacred Bluegrass. So I'm going to play just a sample here from each of those. So first of all, I will sample the one I said was the most important, which was the Primitive Quartet. So this is the group that really, I would say, is most responsible for me playing music as far as above any other music act, basically. it was seeing them play that I thought, oh, that instrument that guy's playing, the mandolin, is really cool. And it caused me to ask for a mandolin for Christmas when I was 5 years old. And I turned six before Christmas, so I was 6 years old when I got the mandolin. But here's a little sample of the Primitive Quartet.
Suffered for me, carried the cross all the way, my sins to atone. Then they nailed him to the cross, great was the pain and the loss, he suffered it all. Because he loved me, because he loved me, because he loved me, my Savior died.
So you can hear that definitely features the guitar heavily. And they were a big influence on my dad, so therefore they were influence on me. And the mandolin player there that I mentioned before, his name's Norman Wilson. He passed away a couple years ago, but he was a great tenor singer and was a guy that, like I said, caused me to be interested in the mandolin to start with. And so I'll play one more little clip of the... This is from a live show of the Primitive Quartet. This is one that was definitely one I remember my dad learning to play on the guitar, Feed My Sheep. Listen to that guitar tone. That was probably, if I'm guessing, an Ovation guitar, which my dad had at one point. And I know Mike Riddle, the guitar player for them, he had one at one point. I'm just guessing from the sound that that's probably what that was. So here's a little sample of the next band I mentioned, the Principals.
To and fro, the disciples were fearing for their very life. They were lost out at sea. High winds were raging, waves all around them. Then a voice spoke, "Fear not, be at ease. Be not."
On this particular recording, I see that studio musicians were Tim Compton and David Johnson. Now, David Johnson is on a lot of records, a lot of gospel records like this that had any sort of bluegrass element to them, because he's a guy that plays everything. And if you listen to that kind of music at all, you're going to come across his playing for sure. Great musician. That's a very chill style of music. Very relaxed music. So some of the earliest, you know, groups of the Primitive Quartet. I mentioned the Isaacs. This is the recording that I'm holding in my hands right now. The cassette is of Joe Isaacs and the Sacred Bluegrass. And it says it came out in 1985, which I would have been 4 years old. And so I'm sure this is one of the ones that I ended up hearing very early in early in my life. So I remember also going and seeing this group live. I barely remember it, but I vaguely have a memory of going somewhere and knowing that it was the Isaacs. And so the one I'm holding in my hand has Joe and Lily Isaacs, Randy Fox, who went on to play with the Primitive Quartet, and what looks like Tim Caudill, who is somebody that I ended up playing with later on with Newfound Road, but I had no idea that he was on this until just yesterday, looking over some of these cassettes I was going to break out and play, or the day before. And so it blew me away that that this was Tim on here. But this is Joe Isaacs and the Sacred Bluegrass.
Down life's highway, alone I've trod. I've always put my trust in God, and I found out that your silver and your gold won't pay the price to protect your soul.
So this credits David Marshall as being banjo, fiddle, mandolin, and lead guitar on one or two of the songs. Joe Isaacs, the rhythm guitar, and Tim Caudill on the bass, as I said. But that gives you some idea of the music I was hearing through those years of being, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. I'm not sure if those recordings would even still be available if you were to go looking for them, but that last one was just called Sacred Sounds, Joe Isaacs and the Sacred Bluegrass. The one before that, The Principles, Be Not Afraid was the title. And the Primitive Quartet, if you look them up, they've got, I wouldn't even start to guess how many recordings they've got. They put out a recording every year for so many years, and maybe even more than one in a year for some of those years. They've been going, at least from that time. I'm not sure if they started in the early 80s or late 70s or sometime during that range, and they're still going today. And putting out records, so it's amazing, you know, how many albums that they would have out if you go looking for them. So with that said, my Uncle Gary, my dad's brother, and his wife at the time, Linda, were in a group called the Glory Bound Singers. And they traveled around and played in the area churches and sang. And, you know, people at that time, for sure, were just very open about having groups like that of singers and would invite more people. Keep inviting people. Let it grow. Get more and more people into the group. And then eventually, it gets too big for everybody to be able to get their songs in. So, they ended up splitting off into two groups. And Gary and Linda, and a man named J.W. Ivins split off and started a group and asked my mom and dad to be part of it. And the other side of the group went under a different name. And so the Glory Bound Singers was then sort of my family thing. And they played with them for maybe a year, year and a half before I had asked for a mandolin. Like I said, when I was 5 years old, I turned six, I got the mandolin for Christmas. My dad taught me my first three chords that night, Christmas Eve, 1986. And then I learned a few more little things along, whatever he was able to teach me. And there was a guy in town in Madisonville. His name was Harley Millsaps, and my dad knew of him, and he agreed to give me lessons on the mandolin. And it only went on for about 6 weeks, maybe seven, maybe eight at the most, but approximately 6 weeks worth of lessons. And every week I would go, he would record some things on a cassette tape. I'd bring them home and learn them. And so I'm going to give you an example of that. I've got the cassette tape right here in my possession that he actually recorded, and I'm going to play a little piece of that.
Little old Joe Clark. I'm giving you a list to take home workout. Old Joe Clark, slow motion. Look here, can you do this? Can you?
So that first thing you heard was Harley playing me down a version of Old Joe Clark. And the second thing you heard was me playing with my dad, showing him one of the things that I knew at the time. I can't even remember which song that is. So he taught me a collection of songs. He taught me Old Joe Clark. He taught me Pull Them Cabbage Down. Turkey in the Straw is one that I distinctly remember learning. Black Mountain Rag. And several others. He would have taught me probably Wildwood Flower too, something like that. But he was a big help in just getting started at picking up on fiddle tunes. He played them for me just up to speed, and then he'd play them a little slower sometimes, and he'd slow it down and let me see what he was doing, and I was able to replicate it after a while, especially after he had slowed it down. And so after those 6 weeks of lessons, it was back up, you know, it was back to being up to me pretty much to learn what I could. And I was still listening to those same kind of gospel recordings, mostly, would be what I was hearing. I do know that my dad had this one cassette of Bill Monroe. And so I was hearing that at some point along the line, too. But I didn't pay it as much attention. It didn't strike me like Bluegrass did later on. But here's a little clip from the Bill Monroe cassette that Dad had at the time.
Thank you.
that one is from Bill Monroe and his Bluegrass Boys, 16 all-time greatest hits, and that is off of the Columbia label. And that one probably is still available. You might be able to find that one. But yeah, I remember listening to that, and I don't know how much of it I really understood as much as I do now at the time. And so I'd been playing for about half a year, or a little over it maybe, when I actually started playing with my family's gospel group. They asked me to go with them on a Saturday night and get up and play, and so I did. And then it just became the thing I was doing. You know, I was, you know, trying to just learn the chords to the songs they were playing and staying with them. And then I would learn little turnarounds for the songs. And then after I'd been doing that for a little bit, my family decided to record an album. And this is a cassette I've got. It's the Glory Bound Singers, and the title of it's In the Sweet Forever. But this is a clip of me playing a little turnaround on a song called The Lowest Valley, which was a Primitive Quartet song that we learned from them. But here I am at about 6.5. Don't think I'd turned 7 yet. Possibly could be. Don't hold me to it. We could have made that in 87. I'm not sure the exact date, and it doesn't have a date on it, so I'm either 6 or 7 years old here. So that's my Uncle Gary on the lead singing there, and my dad playing the guitar, and me doing the little turnaround when it first came on there, my mom playing piano, and Harley Millsaps played the bass guitar on that, and a neighbor of ours, Wayne Martin, played some rhythm guitar. So we had 3 guitars, piano, me on mandolin and bass. That was the very first recording my family did that we had duplicated and sold in churches. So from then on, from the time I was 6.5, going on 7, until I was in my 20s, basically, I was going on a lot of Saturday nights. Most any Saturday night, playing or singing somewhere in a church around East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, Northern Georgia, or, you know, that was about the reach. We didn't really venture out too much more than that. We went to Kentucky a handful of times, played in Harlan once, and maybe somewhere else in Kentucky once, but, so that was one of my biggest influences, you know, just playing with my family like that. That first recording was made in Athens, Tennessee at a studio called Friendly City Recording. Then in another year or two, my family made one with a guy named Jerry Kilpatrick, who was a part of a group with the Hamiltons, Randall Hamilton and his mother, who is the father of Emmy Sunshine. Perfect Joy was their name. So he recorded our second thing in his basement. And then things started to progress a little bit more toward bluegrass on the third recording, where we didn't have any piano. And we got hooked up with a guy in Oliver Springs, Tennessee, by the name of Hal Duncan, who then became our engineer for the next four records. That first one with him was one called Settle Down and Rest, and it had me playing guitar and mandolin, and my dad, my Uncle Gary, a guy named Jeff West played the bass on it, and I think that was about it. And the same group of singers, only my dad started singing at that point. And then the one directly after that really became more bluegrass. So the first one, that Cumberland, was recorded in 93, second one in 94, and you can tell at that point we had started listening to bluegrass a lot more. And so here's what a little sampling of that recording sounded like. So that was a song that we had learned from a recording of traditional grass. I'll play you that in just a minute. But before I get to that, I want to say that banjo kickoff was by one of our family friends by the name of Johnny Love. And Johnny now works with my dad at the school system. And Johnny was a big help to make this record. And Harley Millsaps played some fiddle and guitar on it as well. Johnny played banjo, dobro, and guitar, and I played some banjo, dobro, mandolin, guitar on it. It's one of those things where having those guys do it was a big help, and it also gave me some confidence that I watched them do what they did, and it made me think, well, there's no reason I can't do it too. Because I'd never really played much banjo up until about 94 I was starting to play, and so we got Johnny to play, and then I was able to play some of it, but it's interesting how that works. You can have people that kind of help you and build your confidence along the way. Here's one where I did the kickoff on the banjo. So that was the first one that I ever played any banjo on, having started it somewhere in that last range of a year there. It's also the first one that I started singing on. So I was singing harmony in 93, 94. That's along about the time that I started singing at all, really. The next year in 95, we recorded one that had the same general cast of characters, only we had Keith Garrett was a guest on it. So we met him, you know, the previous year or two. And he played some guitar and mandolin on it and twinned a fiddle part with me on one part. On one song, that is. And in 96, we recorded one, same studio and same group of people, except for we didn't have J.W. Ivins, our family friend, on that one, and Jeff Dawson, another good family friend, came on board and played mandolin with us. Now, he was a banjo player by trade, but by that time, I had really gotten used to playing the banjo, and Jeff ended up playing mandolin with us and learning how to do it, and that was the last one we ended up doing there. Made one more in about 2002, and that was at Randall Hamilton Studio, which is, again, Amy Sunshine's dad. And he had a studio there in Madisonville at the time. So let me talk about that transition into bluegrass a little bit. At some point or another, my Uncle Gary... Well, he worked with the guy Jeff that I mentioned, one of his bandmates, friends at the time, Mitch Gallion, in Sweetwater, Tennessee, at a glass factory. And I'm sure Mitch introduced my Uncle Gary to Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. And then, therefore, I got introduced to it and my mom and dad. And so I'm going to play you a little clip now from the first album I ever heard of Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. So, once I'd heard that, I really got hooked into that sound. I felt like the banjo that I was hearing there had more fire and more drive to it than any banjo I'd heard at that point. And it was probably so, I mean, excluding the fact that I'd heard banjo on the Beverly Hillbillies. It was Earl Scruggs and was really great. But it still just didn't strike me the same way as this did. This was in, you know, it had really good audio quality and that sort of thing. And, yeah, the entire sound of Doyle Lawson's band then became what I strive to accomplish from that point. For a long time, I really would have probably wanted to have been in Doyle's band at some point. And, ended up auditioning several years later on the fiddle. But I just wasn't ready on the fiddle, and he knew it, and I really knew it too. And then in later years, he asked me a couple of times if I'd be interested in being in his band, and at the time, I wasn't, because of, I had jobs at that point that I was interested in doing more. I was playing with Dan Tominski, and then Ricky Skaggs, and that sort of thing. But I can't overstate how much of an influence these Doyle Lawson records were. So that was the very first one that I heard. It was called Treasures Money Can't Buy. It was on the Brentwood music label. And so what happened after that was my family, my dad, started taking us to the Sweetwater Flea Market, where a guy would set up every week on Sunday, and he'd have bluegrass cassettes. Just tons and tons of bluegrass cassettes and bluegrass gospel. And this bluegrass gospel is what got us into it. And Dad would take us over there every Sunday after church, and pick us out. Sometimes, you know, two or three, but definitely one cassette almost every week for a good while, if I remember right. Or it could have been every other week or something like that. But we were consistently bringing new music, new bluegrass music in this same vein into our house. And so we started going back to the older Doyle Lawson recordings. And through that, the guy was like, hey, well, you know, if you like Doyle Lawson, these guys, Russell Moore and Ray Deaton, you know, they have a band now called Third Time Out. You should check them out. And so we got the Grandpa's Mandolin record of Third Time Out. Started listening to that, and man, it was just a downhill spiral from there. I mean, it was Lonesome River Band. So not only were we getting the records there, but, you know, we started getting Bluegrass Unlimited magazine. And there was no online magazines. There was no online, you know, as far as I was concerned at that age. It might have existed somewhere, somehow, but it wasn't readily available. And certainly not to us. We were late to the game on getting any sort of technology. But so an actual physical magazine called Bluegrass Unlimited, which they still do. But we got that in there. Ever since I've been looking at it, there's been an ad for county sales at the same place in the magazine, right behind the page where the chart is. The bluegrass chart. They run an ad with the newest bluegrass records and in some of the biggest hits of all time, or the biggest sellers, you know, I think it might say. But I started ordering from them, and I got a lot of cassettes from there too. And I'll play another little piece of one that I think was very influential. Matter of fact, that song that I played that we recorded, I believe, in the old time way, is the title of this traditional grass recording. And I don't think that this recording is available anywhere. I'm going to try to find out for sure, but if you like bluegrass gospel at all, this is a really great one. I just like traditional grass in general. It's a great sound. But this is their version of I Believe in the Old Time Way. So that's the traditional grass, I Believe in the Old Time Way. And that was a guy named Mark Rader singing the lead and playing rhythm guitar, Joe Mullins banjo and the tenor singing, Paul Mullins fiddle, Gerald Evans Jr. mandolin, and did some harmony fiddle playing, Mike Clevenger bass. But that's another one of the ones that I remember being influential on me. If I really wanted to go in depth, I could sit here for hours and hours and play clips from these cassettes and give great examples of the things that made a difference in my life, basically. So I mentioned Keith Garrett was a guest on the on one of the Moses Family recordings. We changed the name at some point along the line from Glory Bound Singers to Moses Family. And I guess that really was for the only for the last couple of recordings. But I started jamming quite a bit with me and my dad and William and Keith. Keith and his dad, William, that is. And we ended up kind of forming a little band called Slick Rock. And I will play you a little clip of what that sounded like. And that would have been in 96, 97, that sort of range.
Pretty woman gone to my head. Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the corn ground. Dig a hole in the meadow, we're gonna lay down the corn me down. Sitting on the banks of the sea, and a four around her, and a badger on her knee. Dig a hole, dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground. Dig a hole, dig a hole in the meadow, we're gonna let all the corn be down.
That was live at the Cousin Jake Memorial Bluegrass Festival in 1996. It was a competition, actually, which I think we came in third, I want to say, something like that. I was very pleased to come in third, I'm sure. So, another guy that I ended up jamming with a lot there in Monroe County, Tennessee, was Tim Tipton. And so when I was still in high school, my junior, senior year, he asked me to play some with a band called Kentucky Wind. So I did that. And here's a little clip from that band playing live as well.
Tim Tipton.
All right. We'd like to get Randy to come around now and sing an old song. He's been singing since he's a kid. Lived down in Georgia for a while, and he picked this song up, and he'd like to do it for y'all tonight, one called Georgia Girl.
As I lead you along with my memory, thinking back to the years long ago, to the pine covered hills down in Georgia, and the sweet girl that I used to know. She was young and in love with me only. I was good, loose, and foolish, I guess. So I wondered right how the first meeting was, and the fact that I'm lonely till the day. How I miss my Georgia girl today. How I miss the cottonwoods and the red hot Georgia clay. I miss the simple life so many miles away. How I miss my Georgia girl today.
That was Kentucky Wind live, and I'm not even sure where that recording was made, but I'll look into it at some point. and see if I can figure it out. That was me playing the fiddle on that. And the early days of playing fiddle, real scary. But at least they didn't have it up very loud, which was probably a good thing. But as you can see through some of these recordings I'm playing, it took me a long time to progress to be proficient at a different level. I think the biggest part of my progression was after all this, after I started playing with Blue Moon Rising from that point on, and I was playing on a higher level and in a more professional situation, playing with people that were a little more serious about it, and it makes you a little more serious about it. And I really put in a lot of work there in the early 2000s. And a lot of that is chronicled in the early Blue Moon Rising records. And from then on, in my first solo project, Dusty Roads, and then Dan Tomitsky, Wheels record, and then on several from there, you can see on my website, on my bio page, I have a ongoing list, which I've not updated in a while, but I need to update it with a few more records that I've played on. But I have a list there of a lot of the stuff that I've played on through the years. And at this point, I feel like it's quite an extensive list. And I counted something like over 50 to 60 records that I had just laying around here that I'd played on. And there's many more that I've never heard or, you know, seen the finished copy afterwards. You know, I go and play on a lot of stuff for people, and then they go on, they have them made, and they do whatever, and I don't ever hear from them, which is okay, you know, like most of the time, that's totally fine. But it's kind of cool to have, to be able to look back on some of the stuff as well. But I don't know, I hope you've enjoyed the little brush through history there. For me, it means a lot to me, that music does, and it's where I came from. You know, I can't change that. It's one thing I can't go back and change. I wouldn't if I could, but you know, you can't help but be a product of your surroundings. You can definitely exceed anything that you were raised with or born with and that sort of thing. It can be, you know, your life can be a combination of, you know, taking where you came from and you can go well beyond it. But that's definitely an important part of who I am, my heritage, and as a musician, what has made me into what I am. And from that point on, I will say too, you know, I really got into bluegrass heavily around 94 when I made that record and played the banjo in. And I really didn't care to listen to anything else for a long time. But then, you know, along the way, you're always hearing music, whether you're really actively trying to or not. And in high school and college, that sort of time frame in my life, I was, you know, getting exposed to a lot of other music from just other people, other influences in your life, you know. And then after that, I've been interested in lots of different kinds of music since then, and actively try to hear it. But this has been really fun. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you'll come back for more episodes of the Cosmosis podcast. I am pretty committed to keeping this going, and I want it to be on time, if possible, with a new episode every 2 weeks. But I've come to realize as well, with my schedule being as busy as it is, traveling around and playing, that it may not be possible. And I will try to keep up as many as I can with what's reasonable with my travel and my work that I do, studio work and otherwise. And so keep a lookout. I will post on my Facebook when I have new episodes. And And if you subscribe at iTunes, you will automatically have them downloaded, and you can listen to a little bit of it. And if you don't like it, just, you know, you can delete it. You can unsubscribe at any time. There's no big commitment, but I would appreciate it if you would hang in there with me and support the podcast. Send me an email to justin@justinmoses.com and let me know if you enjoy this episode, and let me know what you'd like to hear on future episodes. I'm trying to think of some concepts, some new concepts for some podcasts when I'm not able to book a guest. That's another challenge, just to being on the road and trying to book guests, but I always want to have some ideas flowing. So if you've got an idea or suggestion for an interview, shoot me an email to justin@justinmoses.com or visit my Facebook page, facebook.com/justinmosesmusic. Tweet at me, @justinmoses2, and let me know what you're thinking. So until next time, I really appreciate you listening, and I hope you'll come back for more later. Thanks a lot.